the hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives that for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenue.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here in the Allstate Skyline Studio on this rainy, snowy, wet, damp winter day in Chicago. Thanks very much for tuning in. Things were sunnier on Wall Street at the start of the trading session. The Dow was up nearly, I think it was 298 at the top, and went into negative territory for a time, up 19 now. Personal finance expert Terry Savage joins us on most Wednesdays, and today is one of those. Terry, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Always glad to be with you.
Okay, so I don't know if you followed what's going on with the president and the speaker today. You tell me. This reminds me of the Cuban Missile Crisis when Kennedy decided to honor the first letter rather than, I think it was, that's how it went, rather than the second letter from Nikita Khrushchev, right? There were communications and they just...
those were horrible and frightening times with serious consequences. We have now gone from the sublime to the ridiculous in that regard. I don't know, can Nancy Pelosi, does she have the sergeant at arms of the House have the keys to the door of the House of Representatives? Can
probably.
They lock him out?
I hope not. I mean, I think they probably could, but I hope we can put this behind us. I just thought it was kind of funny that he was going to choose which letter to respond to. Kind of clever that way. Let's go to Davos. We talked to John Najarian yesterday. He was in Switzerland talking about what he was seeing there. Jamie Dimon talking in Davos today. And Bill Dalio as well. And I'm interested in what he had to say about Alexandria.
Ray Dalio.
What did I say? Bill, I'm sorry. Billionaire Ray Dalio.
Yep.
And he was asked about, you know, the income inequality in this country, the damage that it's doing, and these proposals from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez to try to fix it, right? I mean, she wanted to increase the tax rate to 70% on earnings above $10 million. Ray doesn't like that, but he seems to like the idea of doing something.
Let me rewind the tape. You know, at the beginning of the show, you always use my verbal quote there that the idea of tax cuts was that it would grow the economy enough to create jobs, opportunities, and all of that. And not only in theory, it happened in the 80s and happened in the 60s with the Kennedy tax cuts. It was Kennedy who said a rising tide raises all ships. You've heard me say before, when Kennedy came into office, the top personal tax bracket was 91%. Now, very few people were paying that. But the fact is, it wouldn't be unheard of for these swings in kind of historic swings in how we deal with economic growth. Young people who are socialists today, and I have great respect for the new representative from New York, but never learned the lesson of how socialism really brings down everybody's standard of living as opposed to raising up the lower, this is just my belief, as opposed to growth, which gives young people and people on the margins of society, an opportunity to get into the game of having jobs and earning money, and B, gives us enough wealth to be able to take care of those who absolutely can't.
Can I just read from the article? And this is a CNBC article. And frankly, Terry, I don't know if he's talking about the world population or U.S. I think U.S. Dalio pointed out in November that the top 0.1% have a net worth equal to 90% of the population. I mean, that is a pretty amazing statistic.
It is an amazing statistic, and it's going to be the basis for calls for income redistribution. But when you look at the facts, most of our listeners are old enough to remember, but I remember when the Beatles left England because the top tax rate there was 90%. When Bjorn Borg, who was a famous tennis player and the first very wealthy one in the pro era tennis really had big money, he left Sweden. We forget that if you're smart enough to make a lot of money, you're smart enough to be able to deal with tax consequences and move stuff around. It's happened in every generation, in every country.
Yeah, and I don't want this to be.
You get tax shelters, you get distortions. So the fact is, this is going to be a topic for America because instead of getting the economic growth that we should have gotten from business and personal tax cuts, what we got was a whole giant mess caused by everything from tariffs to government overspending. I mean, I think both political parties here are a lot to blame. We didn't get what we should have gotten
So you're saying this tax cut, the 2017 tax cut, didn't live up to the promise?
I think it could have. And it absolutely was starting to when we had a couple of distortions. One is, just look at government spending. It added $1 trillion in each of the last 2 years. Look, it added more than $1 trillion during the financial crisis in 2008, 2009. So I'm not making it political. I'm making it Washington. That any growth, any dividends, any benefits from tax boosts, they spent that and more. Our national debt's now over $20 trillion.
But he seems to be saying that something needs to be done about it. So if it's short of 70%, what do you think, what should be done about it, or what could be done about it?
Well, you see, you're asking a person who, and you know this about me, believes that if you get out of the way and let productive people build businesses and companies, they will employ other people and you get overall economic growth. I believe that firmly. I don't believe that there's an art to plucking the goose until you destroy the golden egg. I don't believe you can raise it just incrementally or marginally and make a difference. I think we need a complete overhaul of how we spend money, which is harder to do. It's harder to do because so much of what the government spends is now mandated. It's not, you know, we'll build a road or we'll build a bridge to nowhere. Now it's social programs that we have an obligation to deal with. It's Social Security, it's retirement benefits, and it's interest on the national debt. Now, I'll predict this.
Okay.
If we get an economic problem in the United States where the dollar itself is called into question. Right now, the whole world wants to be in dollars. It's held up our stock market. It's kept our interest rates low, not because we're so great or they love our politics, but because they think we're the least worst place in the world to be as a U.S. dollar.
Okay.
And how do they buy dollars? They buy our debt. So we added $1 trillion, treasury bills, notes, and bonds sold at low interest rates. People want to keep their money in the U.S.
I got 30 seconds.
If we keep going down this road, rates will go up and the national debt will soar.
Okay, I've got 30 seconds. Terry, wait. 30 seconds.
Okay.
And you say get out of the way and things will be taken care of. But you're also saying that in this case, the government got out of the way. They gave a lot of companies a lot of money and they kept it.
But you know what? They didn't get out of the way enough. They started with this tariff thing. You know, it's hurt farmers, it's hurt jobs, it's hurt small businesses. This government shutdown, both political parties, I'm not casting blame. This is costing more than now, according to the latest figures, than the wall would have. The point is that Washington is its own worst enemy for economic growth and for helping people.
All right.
And I'm not sure that careening from tax cuts for business to tax increases on the wealthy is going to make a difference in the economic growth if government can't get itself out of the way from blocking the opportunities
for growth. We need to take a break. And when we come back, I want you to do my taxes for me, okay? Will you help me with that?
No, I wouldn't. I don't even want to do my own.
It's 12:23. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is on a phone line. Check out her website, terrysavage.com. She has a new column up today about doing your taxes. Do you itemize or do you not? I've already been working on mine, and I'm a big proponent of TurboTax. Terry, you write about TurboTax in this as well. But if the law goes the way it should, right, about 90% of us this year will use the standard deduction and not bother with itemizing in our taxes?
Exactly. And the real question, by the way, full disclaimer, I hate writing tax columns because it's something that really requires some expertise. The only thing I hate more than writing tax columns would be doing my taxes, which I haven't done in years. I really respect my CPA who's done my taxes forever. And we talk about these things. I think, though, that I see right now, you know, don't forget the Tax and Jobs Act was passed in December 2017. So things started happening in 2018 that may have reduced your withholding because you got a tax cut. It impacted business decisions and so forth. But now, as we face the April tax deadline, is the first time that we personally say, woo, what are the many ways this impacts me? And I urge you to go to terrysavage.com because high up in this column is a link. Before you even start your taxes, on the TurboTax blog, which is very hard to find if you just go to TurboTax.com, but there's a link in this column to an online calculator. It asks you five simple questions about your life, whether you're married, filing jointly, things like that. You just click on this. Nothing that personal that you would, you know, sign in for,
sure,
or anything.
Sure, right, right.
Not about doing your taxes, but are you single? How are you? How are you filing? Do you own and have mortgage deduction, et cetera, et cetera? And at the end of that, it will tell you whether it's likely that you need to itemize, or maybe you can save yourself a whole lot of time, energy, money, and so forth, and just take the standard deduction.
You can just start doing your taxes. You could just start doing it at TurboTax Online. You don't have to pay right away, right? And they will take you
exactly
down the road to figure out whether or not you need to itemize pretty quickly.
Yes.
Exactly.
That's the other thing. But that's the big question people have. Is because, remember, it's not just about the increase in the standard deduction. It's about capping the benefits of some very popular tax deductions for state and local income, sales, and real estate taxes.
So I can't write off dependents like I used to, but my tax credit for children is doubled?
Exactly. Well, let's just go back to some of these things. The first thing is you get a larger standard exempt deduction, $12,000 for singles, $24,000 on a joint return. But you don't get the dependent exemption, but you do get this much higher standard deduction. The other thing is, no matter whether you're filing a single return or a joint return, most tax treatments say X amount of dollars on a single and almost double X the amount of dollars on a joint return. No matter whether you're single or joint, you've got a cap of $10,000 on those state, local income taxes and real estate taxes. Well, you know, in Illinois, especially in Chicago with property taxes going up, a lot of people of very modest means find that by the time they figure out their state income taxes and their property taxes, if both are working, it's over $10,000.
You can't deduct now unreimbursed business expenses like you used to either.
There's a whole bunch of things.
Right.
Unreimbursed business expenses, moving expenses, unless you're active duty military. This year, well, if you get divorced in 2019, there's a change in who gets to deduct alimony. That's no longer a deduction for the paying spouse. There is a benefit, the child tax credit. This year, you'll do see it on your return, is raised to $2,000 from $1,000, plus the income limits for claiming that credit are increased. There's new definitions for a qualifying child. There's a new $500 credit for maybe your elderly parents or your kids who are over the age of 17 but still dependent.
All right, I've got to run. I've got
to makes my eyes roll.
Yeah, well, go to the website. It's a good terrysavage.com. It's a good rundown. And as you say, there are online sites that can help you decide which way. And we're off. I enjoy doing my taxes. I can't wait, Terry. I just can't wait to do it.
I knew you were weird. Go to that link in the TurboTax blog. You'll find it in the column to itemize or not. And just it'll take you 3.5 minutes to see where you stand. And it might save you a lot of aggravation as you get ready to do your taxes.
We'll talk next week. Thanks very much, Eric Rung. Steve Bertrand here. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Welcome to Wednesday afternoon in the Allstate Skyline Studio. All right, a little later in the program, or actually I was talking to Bill Leff off the air, I think, I said that Mila Kunis was going to be on to talk about advertising in the Super Bowl. What I meant to say was Frank Sennett was going to be on to talk about Mila Kunis and advertising. But really, they both guests are just as equally exciting, and so I'm happy that Frank from Crane Chicago Business is on a phone line now.
You know, people make that mistake about me all the time, so it's understandable.
That surprises me, but I'm not going to doubt you, Frank. okay, so Mila was the sort of the face or the body behind Jim Beam, right, for several years, and she's been replaced. She's been replaced for the Super Bowl? Tell me what's going on here.
Yeah, so they've got Jim Beam's got a new ad campaign. They are not able to run on the national broadcast because Anheuser has the exclusive liquor ad rights. They will be showcased in one of the Anheuser-Busch InBev ads with the copper lager that they produce in association with Beam. But Beam has bought in the largest markets in the country, New York, L.A., Chicago, and then some markets in its home state of Kentucky, run some new ads in a campaign. And, Mila, they still have a relationship with her, but this is more of a heritage campaign. It's about the rebirth of the brand after Prohibition, and looking back at the founders as kind of really a steeped in heritage kind of an ad campaign, Meal is still too young for that.
It's their first new campaign in 5 years.
Yeah, that's right. And they have Adam and Eve DDB New York. It's their debut effort for Beam Suntory, and they won the account just last year. So this is kind of the rollout of their new ad campaign.
I know it's sacrilegious, but I really wasn't a big fan of the Mila Kunis ads, frankly. I thought they were a little too, I don't know, wasn't my cup of tea. So, go ahead.
They may not have been targeted at you.
Well, I guess that's probably true. But I didn't realize either, that you could not advertise whiskey or alcohol on NFL games until just, a year ago or 2017?
Yeah, so they lifted the ban just in 2017. And like I say, now Anheuser-Busch InBev holds the exclusive alcohol ad, any kind of alcohol-related ad, for the Super Bowl this year. So this was the only way for Beam to kind of get in. But you do see these regional buys sometimes, which I always find interesting. You'll see reports. I think in New Orleans a few years ago, there was some attorney who ran a very colorful ad in his local market. So they call it their Super Bowl ad. There are some, local avails, local openings for ads in these broadcasts. And you often see some interesting stuff bubble up.
Chicago City Council meeting, and Mayor Emanuel is proposing this. I think it's a new commission, but Cranes did a piece. Steve Daniels wrote a story sort of about the Chicago River, its growing impact. And, it may well be a legacy factor for Mayor Emanuel.
Yeah, he's pushing hard on this idea that now that the river has become an asset for developers, they want that riverside association rather than, a detriment, hold your nose and build near there. He wants to take advantage of their desire to build on the river and, get some more fees from developers and create some guidelines so that there are more amenities for citizens and visitors in the city, like a fairly contiguous bike path along the river from, north to south. That kind of thing by creating this new commission, some new fees, taking some currently generated fees for the open space impact fees, and creating guidelines for bike path standardization. Really, the hope is that as the river gets developed with these big operations like the Lincoln Yards plan and the 78 in the South Loop, that there will be some standardization of some nice amenities.
Well, the river walk is kind of fabricated, right? I mean, they had to, they added on to the decking in many ways to create this river walk. What he's looking at here is because we're areas under development, that it would be a more natural space, that it would be green space going up to the river banks, correct?
That's right. It's less of a concrete approach and more of a, native grasses and gently sloping bike paths kind of a scene. And, the city had turned its back on the river for so many years. You drive over the bridge in the neighborhoods, it would be the only way you'd even know you were close to the river, or the smell in the summer. And now we're really seeing we're turning to face it, and I think they really do want to have the amenities developed in less of a urban canyon kind of a way.
It's a pretty remarkable turnaround, and I know Mayor Daley got a lot of it going too, but Emanuel certainly has emphasized it and will probably be remembered a lot for it too. You can read that story from Steve Daniels at Crane Chicago Business. All right, Mila, I'm sorry, Frank, listen, it was nice to talk to you, and I hope we can check again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. If you're not good with change, you might want to take a step back from this one. One of the Michigan Avenue staples, the Purple Pig, has called the shopping street home for the last 10 years, but now it's vacating its current location. Don't worry, they're only moving down the street. The interesting thing is that Chick-fil-A is moving into its location. In the fast food world, Chick-fil-A has been skyrocketing with success as consumers are moving away from heavier options like burgers and taking on chicken alternatives. And all of that success is translating into prime real estate options for them. And speaking of real estate, Truss, a commercial real estate platform for small businesses, raised $15 million. All right, if I can take a moment, I think this is one of those companies that's going to make big waves in the business world coming up. They've only been around for 3 years, raised nearly $25 million, but their biggest selling point is how they utilize their technology. They're using virtual reality in the most realistic and practical ways these days, and that's a big thing to have in your pocket. Keep an eye out for these guys. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
time.
Thanks very much. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. You know what? We could talk to me a little bit, if you want. On the phone line now is Dr. Reuben Baylor. He's a health sciences administrator at the Institute of Drug Abuse. And this is National Drug and Alcohol Facts Week. Dr. Baylor, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Hi, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Well, thanks. I'm glad you're joining us. Now, tell me, what I read about this week is this is predominantly about talking to teenagers, getting facts before teens. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Make no mistake about it. We are in a struggle for the minds and the mental health of our young people. And on one side of this battle, we have the myths, lots of myths out there. On the other side, we have the facts and the scientific work and the evidence. So we are trying to connect the kids with the right information so we can shatter those myths that are so toxic for their well-being and life trajectories.
Well, it certainly seems to me that we have changed societally when it comes to acceptance and advertising and things like that. So we were just talking in the last segment about Jim Beam, the whiskey advertising on the Super Bowl, and it wasn't until 2017 that you could even advertise hard liquor during NFL games. I think baseball's been doing it for 20 years or so, but those barriers are going away.
Yeah, that's the problem. And when the perception of harm goes down, the prevalence of use tends to go up among teenagers. And that's very, very concerning. A very good example of that is the phenomenon of vaping that we have in this country that is very heavy marketing, strategically targeting adolescents, because when we use a substance, you're much more likely to become addicted eventually if you start early. So it's no surprise that the kids are being targeted by these markets, by these corporations, and the result of that is that we have an exponential, a really dramatic increase in the last year of the prevalence of vaping products among adolescents.
Did I read that there were 1.3 million new vaping users just in the last year?
That is correct. The jump between 17 and 18 in the prevalence of vaping has been the highest jump that we've seen for any class of drugs in the history of the Monitoring the Future survey. That is really worrisome.
And so what do you do? How do you dispel those myths there, or how do you share facts about what's involved with that?
One of the things that we have to do is to go where the teenagers are and provide the facts and make them know what the myths are out there and provide information without blaming anybody, with a lot of respect and in a way that empowers them to use the information. At the end of the day, it is their decision. So the scare tactics we know don't work. We have to be respectful of their minds, of their intelligence, and provide information in a cold way, in a way that is relevant to them, and that it percolates in those developing brains in a way that we hope will change behaviors for the better.
Now, so when we're talking about vaping here, we're talking about nicotine vaping, right? Not marijuana vaping.
Not necessarily. We're talking about vaping in general.
Okay.
Most of the vaping is, in fact, with nicotine, devices that deliver nicotine at different concentrations. Second comes THC, which is the active ingredient in marijuana. There is quite a lot of vaping in marijuana. If we look at the teenagers, about 2.6 of the eighth graders use marijuana through vaping. That goes up to 7.6% marijuana use among 12th graders, seniors. So it's very concerning. The rest is just flavoring, or they believe to be just flavorings.
And what's more, you know, what's even worse about that is that it's easier to hide. So it's hard to...
Absolutely, it doesn't smell. Absolutely, it doesn't smell. It's almost like a flash drive in some cases. These are very small devices, tiny devices, very cool ones. They are designed to be cool and to be very appealing to the teenagers. So it's a real problem.
Okay, so let's take marijuana, because I'm interested in that too. CBS was in the news this week where they are refusing a medical marijuana ad on the Super Bowl. Once again, we go to the Super Bowl. I am a proponent of legalizing marijuana, I think. I haven't thought as much of it as I should. We have a new governor here in Illinois who seems to be committed to doing that. And so how do you talk to your teenagers about that when you see a substance? I mean, I don't smoke marijuana. I have, but not for many, many, many years. How do you usher in something that you think should be legal but still advise younger people that it might not be right for them?
Yeah, I'm not going to come on the side of either legalizing or not legalizing, but I can tell you what are the things that come to my mind when I think about this issue. Like in every other complex issue, the devil is in the details. Two things pop in my mind when I think about legalizing one more drug. One is that the two drugs that are legal right now combined, they are responsible for more than 500,000 deaths in the population in the U.S. alone. 500,000 deaths every year, 100% preventable diseases, cigarettes, smoking, tobacco, and alcohol. That's one point that I like to raise. So that raises the question of whether or not legalizing a third drug may have unintended consequences in the long term. This is a very serious question that we need to consider. And the second one, relating to this devilish in the details concept, is that when you legalize a drug, it's not just whether or not you do it, it's how you do it. The devil is in the details. There are huge fundamental differences when marijuana or any other psychoactive drug is used by adults versus teenagers. And as we are seeing now with the phenomenon of vaping, it's very difficult to fence off use by vulnerable populations. It's a very nuanced problem that you really need to dive into the policies and the regulations of how you're going to do it, not whether or not you just want to do it.
Doctor, I got 30 seconds, but are we seeing more strict regulations when it comes to vaping, or is it still sort of under the radar?
Well, in fact, I read this week, I believe, that if the corporations that are marketing these don't find a way to protect the kids, they're going to ban this outright.
Dr. Reuben Baylor is a health scientist administrator at the Institute on Drug Abuse. I enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Steve, it was my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.